This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. It's the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com. The Arizona Cardinals site from the NFL Wire of USA Today. And on the phone with me on the line is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And this is an exciting show, episode 299, one shy of 300. Seth Cox, we have a lot to talk about because J.J. Watt is an Arizona Cardinal. J.J. Watt chose the Cardinals. Oh my gosh. That's what we're talking about. We're going to get into free agency. Let's go ahead and get started. We're going to talk J.J. Watt, our reactions, how he fits. This is kind of the J.J. Watt show because that's sort of going to change everything shape how the Cardinals are going to approach free agency, I think, this offseason. So let's jump right in as to the reactions that we had to the news and then secondarily the contract. Seth, first of all, how surprised, how shocked were you to get the news? And then number two, which is the money came out soon thereafter, did it dampen anything for you?
No, I mean, I was shocked only because I knew what the money was going to be, if that makes sense. You and I mean, we have a group text, and we had heard that they were heavily interested in. My comment all along was, I can't believe they're interested for over $15 million. I mean, that was really my only thing, is that they were going to basically blow their free agency wad before free agency even got here. Now, obviously, you know, I tweeted out the day he signed, the salary cap isn't real. And we talked about
it's
this.
It's kind of real.
Right. I mean, it's only real if you're the Saints or those teams that are so far over the cap that then it's, you know, there's a problem. But the reality is, you can put all these numbers out here and J.J. Watt could just be making $2 million this year and be guaranteed $21 million in 2023 when he's not even on the roster. I mean, that's how you do these accounting things, right? Like, and so we don't know exactly what the numbers look like in terms of the year-to-year accounting, but we know the numbers in 31 million over 2 years, $23 million
guaranteed. However, that looks in combination of signing bonus and guaranteed salary. I can't wait to see the actual cap breakdown and the details of the contract. Those usually hit in 2-3 days. Depends on honestly the agent and how friendly he is with the national media, because it's always the national media guys who break that. I anticipate probably a cap hit of somewhere between 8 and 11 million this year, probably a signing bonus of 15. While it's a 2-year deal, they probably put a dummy year on the back end. And so $8 to $11 million maybe this year, and then it jumps up a bit next year with $5 million of dead money in 2023. But I don't know. I just know this. If you kind of take the pulse of the Cardinals fan base right now, there's a little bit of concern because of his age and the history of injuries he's had over the last couple of years. But I will say this. This was the sort of thing that the Cardinals, whether it's Steve Keim or whether it's Michael Bidwill, they really like to splash and kind of show that they're trying to win now. They believe they're in that mode. And there is a buzz about the Cardinals because of such a high-profile player making this move to the Cardinals. You just kind of feel a buzz. Now, was I shocked that he picked the Cardinals? I'll tell you, we had a little bit. I'll give you the background on this. While we knew the Cardinals were interested, we kind of knew this was coming down the pike, or that it was highly possible based on, so here's second, you know, third hand information. So I have a contributor who knows some guys who happens to play Warzone with one or more of the Cardinals players on Xbox or PlayStation, whatever. And through that the conversations they've had, that, you know, it's kind of weird that a Cardinals player would, you know, give up this information to some rando on a video game console, that J.J. Watt to the Cardinals was a very likely scenario as long as the money could work. And lo and behold, just a few days later, it comes through. So completely shocked that it happened. I was not. I was thrilled because, and the more I think about it, the more thrilled I get. But understand, you guys who've been listening to this show since the beginning, or even, you know, fairly recently, you know how I get. I get excited about this sort of thing. I've gotten sucked into every Cardinals offseason dating back to like 1991. So I'm excited about it for a number of reasons. I like the move, and I think it makes a lot of sense. I've seen things, you know, you kind of look at some of the significant, you know, the future Hall of Famers that joined the Cardinals late in the career. Yes, you've got, you know, got Emmett Smith, who was chasing the all-time record. That was a marketing move by the Bidwills back in the day with a fan base that was significantly pro Cowboys at the time. Kurt Warner, Alan Faneca, who played his final, now a Hall of Famer, played his final season with the Cardinals. Edgerrin James, same thing. And then now you've got J.J. Watt, surefire, he, you know, well on his way to the Hall of Fame right now. And different, you know, I know Seth, you had some concerns about you, like, it wasn't like you felt that it was going to be, you just worried, you just hoped that this was not like another Terrell Suggs. And I will say one thing, that at least in the introductory press conference, if we take it back a couple of years to Terrell Suggs, if they asked how much he has in the tank, now granted he was like 5 years older at 37 years old, Terrell Suggs was like, we'll see. Turns out he didn't have more than a couple of games of gas left in the tank. And JJ, when he introduced himself, he said
more games left for the Chiefs.
Than he, yes, yeah, he did. And JJ Watt is like a lot, like more like a lot. How much gas you got to take? And he was like bothered by that. He still expects to dominate. This isn't like Suggs, where he came and he was gonna see what he did because he knew that he was on the back end of his career. Watt knows, obviously, he knows his athletic mortality. But he still views himself as a top defensive player in this league. And that's exciting to see, that sort of swagger and just that inner confidence that, you know, he still views himself like a defensive player of the year type player.
Yeah, and I mean, when you just look at it, I mean, my biggest concern is always with how you're going to construct a team around a great player. That's always been my issue with going after a Watt, because when he was first cut, I think fans expected him to take less, right? Like, people expected to see 7, 10, maybe 12 million a year. And so for him to come out and get basically 16 million a year was a bit surprising. But we had heard that 15 million was going to then be right about where they were going to be. And that made it difficult to see how the Cardinals were going to work that with all of the issues they have this offseason. Now, I'll say this, when it comes to a player like J.J. Watt, or the position of J.J. Watt, you understand that if he is, let's say, 85%, because I mean, we're not going to get 2014 J.J., but if he's 85% of that and he's still, you know, one of the 10 best defensive linemen in the NFL, you see a guy that can affect the pass rush in such a way that it would help the pass coverage. And so that makes him I don't want to say invaluable, because obviously there's still a price, but that makes the contract more worth it, because you're able to probably get by on, you know, let's say a Carlton Davis, like what the Bucks have. You know, you look at the Bucks secondary, it's not like it's teaming with all pro talent, but they produce such a ferocious pass rush that it gets away with it. I think that's kind of where the Cardinals are trying to get to. I'm not going to say that they are, but I think that's how they're trying to get. And if they are able to get there, then that'll make things easier on the secondary.
Absolutely. You see kind of how a few teams build their defense, and we'll talk in just a little bit, we'll talk about the effect on the defense, but you see teams take kind of two philosophies, and one is to start with the rush to protect the coverage. San Francisco's kind of done that, and so with the secondary pieces that they've had, they've been successful defensively, because you have a fierce, you know, Tampa Bay did the same thing. Honestly, you look at the Chiefs championship team, they did that as well up front, with they built the defense around the pass rush, and then the coverage has helped. Then you've got teams like the Patriots over the last few years who build from the secondary in, and so you use the good coverage to generate pressure as well, because you get quality. Maybe there's not a wrong way to do that, but all I kind of have to say, I do want to talk a little bit about the money, and it's interesting because the Cardinals managed and Watt made it clear that he wanted this kept very privately. And so there was no, like, it wasn't until just a couple days ago when over the weekend when the report came out that he was, at least one of the offers was in the range of 15 to 16. Hello, that was the Cardinals, because his deal is 15 and a half per year for 2 years. That the John Gambadora here locally on Arizona Sports 98.7 came out and said that there were at least two other teams that offered more than the Cardinals, and that has been shot down by a number of people nationally. Charles Robinson, Yahoo, and he didn't just plain out say that that's not true. He said unless teams are flat out lying, he hadn't heard that any teams had offered more. Ian Rappaport from NFL Network said that this contract was surprising, that teams were kind of looking at him in the kind of the 11, maybe $12 million per year range. And I'm wondering, because it feels like Gambo got, clearly the message he got, that was something from another team saying, hey, we offered him more. And the interview that they had with him after his introductory press conference, they worded the question such, why'd you choose to take less here? Now Watt didn't confirm or deny that he took less money to come with the Cardinals, but I firmly believe that if you're on the Twitter, if you're looking at the Twitter wars of Gambo and other people, there is a way for this to be true on all sides. And that would be this. While teams were looking for the, if the Cardinals gave him 2 years, $31 million, and another team offered him $3 and $36, technically, then a team could go to a reporter and said, hey, we offered him more money, with, you know, excluding the detail that it was on a third year. So it is highly possible that Watt was offered more total money by another team. But it sounds like, based on everything we're hearing, that the Cardinals gave him the most guaranteed and the most per year average.
Yeah, and I think that's probably a realistic thing. I mean, you and I have talked about this, you know, on air before, off the air recently, and a lot of it comes down to interpretation and how you want to interpret everything. And like you said, when a guy gets information about, well, the Cardinals didn't offer him the most money, that can be an absolutely factual statement while it's incorrect. And so, as Jess said, in the end, and this is not us defending Gambo by any means, this is just us saying, in the reality, all the team had to do was say, hey, you know, JJ, here's 3 years, $36 million, but we're only going to give you half of that guaranteed 18. And JJ's thought is, I'd rather guarantee myself $5 extra million than worry about making, you know, getting cut after 2 years. Because that's the reality at that point. If you get cut after 2 years and you've only made $18 million, then, you know, that extra $18 million you have on the back end doesn't matter. So, I mean, in the end, I think there's probably some truth to all of it. We're never going to really know. And we'll, you know, we'll just figure out. I mean, you hate to say it this way, but you'll figure out who is right. I mean, if Watt is a Pro Bowler, then the Cardinals were right. If Watt was an All-Pro, then they were definitely right, and they probably underpaid. And if he helps bring a Super Bowl to the team, then it doesn't – I mean, they could have paid him $1 billion, and nobody's going to care.
Right, right. And, you know – I'm just excited to see how this plays out, because monetary, we'll see how it goes. But I'm excited for what this means, because it still shows that the Cardinals are willing. And I think it was significant to show to the players in their locker room, for guys like Kyler Murray especially, a guy that comes in with the juice that Watt has, just on so many levels, is significant. And I think that will continue to, because it seems that Kyler is going to be the sort of player behind the scenes that's going to challenge the organization to put them in the best position to win and win now, and not just build for the future. So in that sense, while you think, well, they might not be, they're not that close, but if their goal is to get there, that is the exact sort of move that you have to make. Coming up on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to talk about the fit on defense and how he potentially improves things as we look at that moving forward. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now, we've got the initial shock and awe, the money out of the way. I'm interested to know how this, and I'm, you know, I'll say this. I was bullish about Devon Kennard a year ago. I'm super bullish on this move for a couple of reasons. J.J. Watt, if you watch, even last year, even the year before when he was got hurt after five games, if you sit down, if you watch game tape at all, and I'm not a big game tape watcher, but I turned on a few games of coaches' film. If you just watch Watt, it is fun to watch, because in many ways he still is unblockable. Like, you're one-on-one, people don't block him, he dodges blocks. Whether he's staying within scheme, that's a different story. But if you look at the way he plays, it's just crazy fun if you just zero in on him and how he toys with offensive linemen, and how between his athleticism, his smarts, and his relentless effort, is just pops out if you watch him.
Yeah, and he's still a dominant player. The question that it becomes for him is, what does he have left in the tank in terms of how often he can play at that level? I was watching a couple guys talk about it today, Justice Mosqueda, one of them, and Justice was talking about how, you know, ideally you still use him as a edge guy, and then you flip him inside on pass rushing downs because he's so good. But he doesn't have exactly he's not as dominant as he was, obviously, in 2014 and 15, in those years. But he's still really, really good when you get him in the right position. And so that's kind of where you go from this type of thing is how do you use him still and where do you line him up? And to me, that's the biggest question mark.
It's going to be interesting to see how they do that, because if you look at the Houston defense the last few years, you see him play how he's listed. He's listed on the Cardinals roster as a defensive lineman. That's how he's introduced. And if you look at where he started with Houston, he played in a 3-4 defense. He was essentially a 3-4 D end. Now, so he played with outside linebackers out around him, whether he was on the right or the left side, he always had an outside backer in base flanking him. And so that would make sense. And so as the roster is currently constructed, that would give you Watt, Lecky Fotu / Rashard Lawrence as the nose, Jordan Phillips as the other defensive end. And then you've got the two outside backers of Chandler Jones and Devon Kennard. But what we've seen Houston do consistently is when they go to their nickel set and they go to a four-man front, which the Cardinals do, so they take the nose tackle off the field, and you bring in the nickel back, and you've got essentially a four-man front. Watt then goes to the edge. He still is an edge rusher, and that would then take off Kennard and the nose tackle, and then that, you know, you'd bring in a different interior lineman that would be someone like Zach Allen or the like, and you have then Chandler Jones on one side and JJ Watt on the other with Jordan Phillips and Zach Allen on the inside, and honestly that is super exciting. Or if things got crazy and they managed to re-sign either Hassan Reddick or Marcus Golden, they could even play around and keep Watt and Phillips on the interior two tackle spots at the three. And then you use Reddick or Golden opposite Jones, and you got yourself four very, like, in terms of relentless effort, if you have Golden, Watt, Phillips, and Jones, because all four of those not only are talented pass rushers, they also play with a super high motor. That would be a very, very difficult four-man front to block.
Yeah, and that's kind of the key to this entire thing is if you're going to spend the money on J.J. Watt, it has to come with the effect of, I mean, let's just flat out say it. They have to be the best pass rushing team in the NFL. Just because they're unless they're able to convince still talented veteran free agents to sign for less money, they're going to be young and cheap in the secondary. And so that pass rush will automatically take off the pressure of the secondary. I mean, I know we talked about it a little bit earlier, but, you know, outside of hardcore football guys, who knows the cornerbacks from the Kansas City Chiefs last year? Who remembers the cornerbacks from the Giants when they were beating Tom Brady in the Super Bowl? I mean, that's the thing, is like, it's not like those teams had prime Richard, you know, they weren't the Legion of Boom. Like, they were all brought to this because of the pass rush. And so if the pass rush is able to generate that pressure and create that havoc, then it just takes so much pressure off of everything else. So you can get over investing that highly in a older guy because it has created so much change everywhere else. The other thing it does is remember it, that the best aspect of Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay's offense is getting their quarterbacks moving. Ideally, if you can rush from all four positions instead of just two, you create a much harder game. It's much harder to game plan and move the pocket, if you will, when you have four guys that can bring pressure. And that's going to be the key is, you know, and obviously we're getting ahead of ourselves, but can, if they're unable to re-sign Reddick or Golden, can Kennard win one-on-one? Is Dennis Gardick going to be able to play as more of a pass rush, you know, even more pass rushing snaps once he gets healthy, if they bring him back? Do they invest in an edge player in the draft, knowing that, you know, that they do have 2 30-plus-year-olds as their main pass rushers and they need some type of youth? Like, that's going to be the question. But the idea behind it is that Watt brings that, and it should make this defense as a whole better.
Absolutely. It does a couple of things. It shores up that defensive line that was really, but he kind of takes care of two positions at the same time, because he plays the interior, plays the edge. And so you add versatility there, and it now minimizes what they might have to spend in free agency on the edge. It also kind of takes away the need on the defensive line. And if you want to look at kind of what the Cardinals did, what Vance Joseph did, he had some fancy formations in the second half of the season where there were, went on their third down defense is when they went with no defensive linemen and all linebackers. So they had six linebackers on the field and all standing up, creating confusion. And you look back to that game against the Seahawks when Isaiah Simmons had that interception, it was that sort of formation that confused Russell Wilson, because it looked like they were bringing pressure and then Simmons dropped and just picked that ball out of the air. Cardinals had to do that. Honestly, Vance Joseph had to do that because of a number of things. They had no Chandler Jones, and then they ended up with like five different defensive linemen on injured reserve. And so they just plain didn't have bodies, and so the way they generated pressure was by adding mismatch, deception, and speed. If you've got a healthy Jordan Phillips and a healthy J.J. Watt and a healthy Zach Allen who did some nice things down the stretch, you might not need to see that package again, because a simple, like, whether you put J.J. at the 9 or at the 5 on, or the 3 on nickel packages, you're going to have two, like, if you can have, with the combination of Jordan Phillips, Zach Allen, and J.J. Watt, you've got three interior linemen that you don't want to take Phillips off the field on passing downs. You don't want to take Watt off the field on passing downs. And you don't have to do that. So maybe once in a while, but you're going to see a much more traditional look. You're going to see 3-4 base, and you're going to see 4-man nickels. And that, I think that's pretty much it, as long as if they're healthy again. If Chandler Jones is healthy, J.J. Watt's healthy, and they stay healthy on the defensive line, we might not see that crazy package in 2021.
Right, and it might, you know, and when they do use it, it'll be more unconventional, not be something that they do as often, maybe as they did last time, or had to do, like you said.
Yeah, so it can be more to say. They did it because they had guys like Tanner Vallejo who could play. You had Dennis Gardeck who could rush, and you had Isaiah Simmons and Devondre Campbell. We don't know what the linebacker, the inside linebacker group is going to look like next year so far. But let's move on and kind of talk about personnel-wise, how that changes. So coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, how does the addition of Watt now change the landscape of their defensive line and their outside linebacker room? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. And J.J. Watt, because he plays multiple positions and he anticipates he'll move around, whether he plays more edge, whether he plays more in tackle, that's yet to be seen. However, it does mean that their need at both outside linebacker and on the defensive line is diminished. What do you think the impact at outside linebacker might be, specifically since they've got both Marcus Golden and Hassan Reddick as free agents? What do you think Watt's addition does in terms of their plans at that position for 2021?
You know, I'm interested to see, because while he is going to play kind of that defensive end position, you are still needing somebody that plays on the edge. Obviously, right now, you're probably starting front three, as you said, are Watt, a combination of Fotu and Lawrence, and then Jordan Phillips. And then your outside backers in that 34 look are going to be Devin Kennard and Chandler Jones. You probably still want one more guy that's not Dennis Gardeck. And that's not to say anything negative about Dennis Gardeck. We were both more than pleasantly surprised about his work this year. But you probably need an edge in the realm of Hassan Reddick or Marcus Golden that gives you a little more. And so I think that's what you're looking at. And so as I was saying, I don't know if that means that, you know, that's an option on, maybe it's not a day one option, but it's a day two option in the draft. I mean, this draft has some really interesting day two prospects for edge rushers. You know, the fact is the Cardinals have a lot of options. It's just a question of how they want to go after it.
It felt like if they hadn't gone out and gotten J.J. Watt, that it kind of, if you had to draw things up, Devon Kennard was probably a lock to be a cap casualty to either sign either Hassan Reddick or Marcus Golden or even both somehow. Now, and I put this out on Twitter, this is not to say that they're not going to get Reddick, or the Reddick thing is kind of intriguing. And I actually have an article I'm going to write about this, because his market will be super intriguing, because combination of his age, athleticism, his production in just his last season, and just his fit on certain teams. Now, if you're going to play Watt primarily as an edge rusher in nickel downs, that actually diminishes their needs significantly for a, you know, great pass rusher or an edge rusher they're going to spend a significant amount of money on, because you're going to have Chandler and you're going to have Watt playing those edge rusher positions. And so to sink a significant amount of money for a guy who's going to be rotational at best seems like maybe not the best way to use your limited resources, which is where like a Dennis Gardeck is perfect, because and as much as everyone loves Gardeck, I don't see him ever being a full-time defensive player because of the physical limitations he has in terms of if size as a pass rusher, but he does make a perfect rotational guy where he gets, you know, 10 snaps a game, 10 to 15 looks a game maximum, because of his effort, because of his relentlessness, and being a core special teams player who has pass rush upside. He's a guy you can splurge on and not break the bank, because he's primarily a special teams player. You add a Reddick or a Golden, and so right now, I think Devon Kennard has his best chance of staying on the roster at the moment, because he actually fits perfectly to kind of the 3-4 outside backer you'd want to have with the J.J. Watt. Because, you know, if he's going to come off the field on nickel downs so Watt can rush the passer, Kennard is a very strong run defender. He's athletic enough to be able to move in coverage and peel off on those running backs. And he doesn't offer the pass rush upside. I will say I was bullish on the Kennard. I still think he's a 10-sack potential guy if he's healthy all year playing that outside backer position. I still do. I think last year was just it was disappointing. He was productive the first few games. Then he got hurt. Then he got COVID. And then got Golden, who frankly, whether it was how he was playing in practice or simply because the Cardinals always had a higher grade on Golden
than Kennard. You re-sign Golden, and I think he can do some of the same things in terms of on the run defense, although he doesn't have as quite the athleticisms to cover. He does give you better upside in the pass rush, but if you spend a significant amount of money on him or Reddick, if he's just going to be a number three edge rusher, it's hard to spend that much money. And if you're going to spend more than $3 or $4 million a year, you want him playing more than just half the nickel downs.
Yeah, and so that's the thing, is if you're just going to need him as your kind of third rusher, I think this kind of really deep edge class is where you go instead, because you've got different guys all over the place. I mean, you've got guys that, you know, fill the kind of edge setter role. You've got straight pass rush guys that probably aren't going to have any effect early on as anything other than a pass rusher. And that kind of plays into what they need. And so I think with the limitations on where they are financially and what the immediate need is, because I mean, I think you would agree, if they're going to re-sign Reddick, they probably cut Kennard at that point, right? Because they can't have both of them.
Most certainly. That's, yeah. I feel that Kennard is redundant for either player, Golden or Reddick, either one of them.
And so I think if you, you know, instead go find a day two outside pass rusher, you know, whether it's like a Joe Tryon from Washington. I mean, these are all guys we'll talk about later on, but you know, a Joe Tryon from a Washington, or who's the kid out of what was his name, out of Oklahoma, Ronnie Perkins, you know, or you can go find a guy like Joseph Asai out of Texas. I mean, those are all, I mean, that's three guys right there in the second and third round that fit exactly kind of what you're talking about. They're guys that you could probably depend on to start if need be, but they'd be much better serve kind of doing what Isaiah Simmons did last year and kind of playing in spots. And let's be honest, with edge pass rushers, there's a lot more opportunity to play in spots when you just say, hey, go sack the quarterback, and not, hey, I need you to know, you know, this assignment and this assignment and this assignment in this, you know, situation. Isaiah, good luck. And then, you know, oh, he messed up, now we can't play him for three games, type of thing. Like, it's a lot easier just to be like, hey, go get the quarterback, and we're going to have you do that 7 to 12 times a game, and you know, hopefully you'll come out with 5 sacks on the season type stuff.
Yeah.
So.
And even on the roster, because, you know, he hasn't done anything yet, but in terms of depth, you got a Kylie Fitz who's going to be back. He's an exclusive rights free agent. Guys that they have on futures deal, Reggie Walker, I know that they kind of like what they have in him. He was on the practice squad all last season. And then they added a guy that was in Philadelphia. He's been essentially a bust since he entered the league, but Sharif Miller, who is a pretty productive pass rusher at Penn State, I think might fit better this defense. And so you've got some young, intriguing guys that they're not going to be stars, but they can do some productive things and limited things. You know, a guy in terms of that's kind of fun, you look at the kid out of Michigan. There's a lot of edge rushers, actually, that are kind of fun to watch. But a guy that... who's going to fall a lot this year, the kid out of Oregon State, I don't think, like Hamilcar, I don't know how to say it, Rashad.
Yeah, Hamilcar Rashad, yeah, who's a guy I really
was,
like.
He was, I mean, the production he had in 2019, and then he had nothing in 2020. But I will say that for the Pac-12, 2020 was a really weird year.
Well, and that's just the thing. I mean, you've got a guy like Rashad who's projected to go in the, you know, on day three. And so he's just a freakish athlete. You know, 15 sacks in 2019, like you're talking about. And then you look at it this year, he only played, he played half the amount of snaps. Obviously, he had no sacks, but, you know, he just, he struggled, but that's understandable too. So the question becomes, you know, do you think he's a guy that can, in limited chances, get after the quarterback? There's a kid out of Miami, Quincy Roche, who, you know, is kind of the overlooked guy of that group because they've got the, what's the kid's name? Gregory Rousseau, and then they've got Jalen Phillips that are looked at as round one guys. But Roche could be kind of that day two, late day two, early day three type. I mean, he had six sacks as in 18, 13 sacks in 19, and then six sacks this year. And so that's fairly consistent production. I mean, that 13's a bit of an anomaly, but he bookends that with 2 6-sack seasons. So maybe in the NFL, he's a, you know, 4 or 5-sack guy in limited time. And like we're saying, we're not looking for a starter. We're looking for a guy that can give you productive snaps.
And then if you look on the defensive line, I think it changes where you might have gone out and looked at getting another defensive lineman. I think they are done, except with the exception of one maybe thing. And that would be, and it might be late, a veteran nose tackle. And I think that's the only, that might be one of the only things they do other than bring in young players, because they've got Phillips, they've got Zach Allen, they got J.J. Watt, you've got Michael Dogby, you've got Lecky Fotu, and you've got Rashard Lawrence. And then you've even got, they added a couple of guys, the futures deal, this kid David Perry. So at most, I think their defensive line, they might add a veteran minimum, a guy who could play nose tackle. Because Corey Peters, that might be the guy, but that probably won't be till nearly the season, till training camp. He's got the knee injury, and, you know, they kind of want to move on. Perhaps Doma Tepeko as well. He didn't sign till November each of the last 2 years, so I think he's looking for a team to play in the playoffs with. I think of the defensive line, they're pretty much done this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, they would have to be, unless a guy like, Alan McNeil or somebody falls to the third round in the draft, where they're just, it's just such a value that they couldn't overlook it type of thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Coming next on the Rise Up Seared podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about, actually, we're going to change gears. It's not going to be about the defensive line. It's not going to be J.J. Watt. It's actually going to be about Josh Jones, their second-year offensive lineman out of Houston from last year, drafted in the third round. Offensive line coach, run game coordinator Sean Kugler offered up some little bit of tidbit no one asked for. That's coming next on Rise FC Red. We're back on the Rise FC Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, and it appears that Josh Jones can do a little bit more than initially we thought. Who was a pretty dang good left tackle. Wasn't Josh Jones your favorite tackle in the draft last year?
Yeah, he was. I mean, and for a lot of the reasons that we're going to talk about, you know, the athleticism, the length, how quick twitch he was of a player. He was just a guy that looked like he could play in the NFL. And you know, we'll get to a little bit of a philosophy that I've had since about 2015 when it comes to drafting offensive linemen. So, you know, we'll get to that in a second.
But, you know, when it was drafted, it felt like people were saying, wow, he dropped the third round. They don't know why. And people thought he would probably play right tackle at the start. I kind of got the vibe from the very first day they drafted him that they had zero plans of starting him as a rookie. But it was always kind of pegged that he was going to be the right tackle of the future and maybe potentially left tackle if things didn't work out with DJ Humphreys. But Sean Kugler, when he spoke to the media for the first time since his promotion to run game coordinator as well, when he was asked about how Josh Jones did, he said, you know, he liked what he did. He got his feet wet. He didn't have to start, which was good. and then said he offers positional flexibility at tackle and at guard. And we're like, wait, what? What guard? And, you know, Josh Jones, who has the length to be a good left tackle, and now Kugler is throwing that information out there that maybe he can play some guard. And that was unprovoked. Nobody asked him about it. He just threw it out there kind of saying, we'll see what's happening for next year, which means you know that it is a possibility, because if we want to, let's kind of take the dialogue back a couple of years. Justin Murray, when they claimed him off waivers, he ended up playing right tackle for 12 games and starting 12 games at right tackle for the Cardinals in 2019 after they had everybody get hurt. You know, Marcus Gilbert went down before even the first game. Then they brought in Jordan Mills. He got hurt. And so Murray ended up being the guy playing right tackle. And Steve Keim, after the waiver pickup, it was really interesting because he was on his sixth team in 4 years, never played more than two games in any season. He said he was really excited about the addition of Justin Murray, especially his ability to potentially play guard. And you're like, he's playing a tackle. And then, lo and behold, the next year, this last year, you see him. First, he's backup right tackle. And then suddenly he's getting reps at guard. And then he's their first guard off the bench when there's injury bang-ups, like Justin Pugh getting knocked or nicked up, or J.R. Sweezy getting nicked up. He goes in the lineup as a guard and then just takes over the position completely at right guard late in the year. And so when they talk about position flexibility, and then he plays guard. So to me, just offering that information out there tells you they're really considering him moving to guard, which kind of changes how you look at what they might do at tackle. Because I thought entering this offseason that Kelvin Beachum, who played really well, they'd probably move on since they still have Marcus Gilbert under contract. I know you can't count on Marcus Gilbert because he hasn't played in, you know, seems like 10 years. But you start him there, and then you anticipate Josh Jones takes the starting right tackle job, and you've still got Justin Pugh, you've got Justin Murray, and then you've got a battle at center, depending on what happens in free agency. Where do you think he ends up playing?
You know, after listening to it and kind of reading between the lines, I think their first goal is for him to be the right guard. I think they love what Justin Murray offers them as their kind of lead backup at three or four positions, and that from there you look at some options. You and I have heard through the grapevine that they're interested in one of the top centers in free agency. That would make sense, you know, especially with the all-in mentality that we've talked about when it comes to before Kyler Murray gets his extension. And then this draft class, I mean, we talked about the edge players, but this draft class is heavy, heavy on tackle talent. I mean, we've talked about three or four guys that could go in the first round that could play right tackle right out of the gate. And so maybe that's what their thought process is that, yeah, we're going to change over three-fifths of our offensive line, but we feel like they're all going to be upgrade-type things, you know, and kind of – and really, like you said, go for it in this Kyler Murray final two-year run before they have to really pay him.
They could go a couple of – whether it's Justin Pugh. So you could look at it, Jones, who played the left side at left tackle all through college – maybe it makes more sense to slide him to left guard to replace Justin Pugh, or maybe they let Justin Murray play left guard if they decide to cut Pugh, move Josh Jones inside to right guard, then you bring in a tackle, or you have Gilbert or Beachum cut, you know, re-sign Beachum, and then you draft a guy who could take over. It just gives you a lot of options that it makes it a whole lot more difficult to project what that offensive line is going to look like when they throw that tidbit. Because I went into this offseason kind of feeling that Jones was probably they hoped he would start at right tackle. And now that becomes a, I'm not sure, maybe because they think they, for whatever reason, they want to put five guys on the field that they like better and maybe save money, which could mean Pugh is gone or what. I don't know. But it's, to me, it's just super intriguing because it just completely changes what that offensive line might look like next year.
Well, exactly. That's the big thing, is it gives you options. And that's one of the things that we've talked about is, you know, the offensive line definitely didn't play up to what we had hoped this year. It was not as good as it was in 2019, especially in the run game. However, I wouldn't say it was the worst part of the team. And so that's the question they have to answer is, you know, where are they going and how do they want to upgrade it? And I think, you know, one, investing in your offensive defensive line is never a bad thing. I think you and I can both agree with that. Like, that's never something that you should look down on, but at the same time, you do have to be intelligent about how you invest in those positions and where you do invest in them. And I think the Cardinals, at least on the defense side of the ball, have said, hey, we're going to go veteran pass rushers. You know, we're going to kind of go all in for this next 2 years of Kyler Murray and really kind of put all our cards on the table. And then, so how they play out that offensive line structure is going to be interesting to watch as well.
Yeah, and it's just going to be, and let's talk about that next. In fact, let's kind of go over that, because we're going to go over next, coming next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, what's next for free agency that we're going to talk, because there's a lot of moving parts now, Watt being the big addition. Cap cuts haven't happened, but they're coming for sure. So that's coming next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the SR of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on now to talk about free agency in general. Free agency is now 2 weeks away. We're recording on a Tuesday night. In 2 weeks, the negotiating window will have, or the contact window, the legal tampering period, whatever you want to call it, will have opened, and free agency will begin. And the Cardinals already made their splash like they did last offseason by trading for DeAndre Hopkins, but that didn't end it for them last year. They went out and got Jordan Phillips, paid him 3 years, $30 million. They grabbed Devon Kennard after he was cut. They also got Devontae Campbell. They made some minor moves. But what do you think they do now? It feels like that their next priority is at center to make a splash. Corey Linsley is the name out there. And so it's kind of interesting what's going to happen there, how much money they throw at him, because he's going to have a lot of suitors. They still have nobody at cornerback, and they have questions. You have questions to answer about both Marcus Golden and Hassan Reddick. What do you think changes now? Do you think, let's talk with Reddick and Golden. What likelihood do you now see that either one of those players come back?
You know, it's definitely lower than it was if we would have had this conversation last week. I thought last week that Reddick would have actually been the priority over everything else. I don't think he's going to be the priority. Not that they're going to just let him go by any means. Just that they're going to have a number and they're going to let that number be known, and you either take it or go see what else you can get. And I mean, let's be honest, Kime's been notorious for that for years. Like, this is your money. This is your offer. And with some guys, he'll say, hey, that offer's good until you sign somewhere else. And so other guys who he, you know, maybe trust or trust less. So he says, hey, this offer's good until you leave the building. Then you got to figure it out on your own. I think with Reddick, he'll be one of those guys that they put an offer out to. And he says, hey, this offer's good until you sign. But if you go out and you can't find anything better than this, or, you know, or what you're getting offered is equal to this, come back to where you know that we want you. I think Golden would kind of be the opposite. I think Golden would be, hey, this is the number we're willing to go to. If you don't want it, you know, happy trails again, type of thing.
Yeah, I think at this point, Reddick is going to be hard to unless which is going to be interesting, because I think there's that possibility that he might not, as much as he'd like to get elite pass rusher money, he might not be able to pull, you know, $10 million. He might not be able to get the 7-digit per year salary. I get the impression that the Cardinals might have made him some sort of offer based on a tweet that he had the other day. They say they want me to show them I can do it again. You know, whether that was just to, you know, people in general, or if that was in response to an offer that the Cardinals made saying, hey, we want to offer you 1 year this, or we want to see you do it again before we sign you long term. So there's that. I think now it becomes more likely Golden is signed, but I also can see a scenario where neither one of them comes back. No J.J. Watt. I'm certain that at least one of them comes back. But now I think it'll be likely Golden or neither. And I hope Chandler Jones feels like that there's a Chandler Jones contract extension coming, which will free up some cap space as well, which then allows to do some other things, because cornerback is still a big problem. They don't have Patrick Peterson. You've only got Byron Murphy and Robert Alford, and yet we know that Robert Alford's probably getting cut unless, which I propose, you know, I think should be they should do, and you think should do, not necessarily cut him, but slash his salary down to like $1.5 million plus incentives. And that way, it's a non-guaranteed thing. If he stinks it up in the offseason, you can still cut him, save the money. But that way, you have a veteran on your roster who knows how to play the system.
Right. And, you know, I look at it, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. If they cut Kennard, I think you and I both would agree that they've got something coming down the pike with Reddick or Golden. If they cut Pugh, you have to assume that they feel like they're going to get Lindsley, right? Or whether they do that before or after, because at least that gives them a veteran inside now on the line. And maybe they have bookend kind of veterans and Hump and, you know, bringing back Beecham, and then maybe they're go young with Jones and Murray on the interior, with Lindsley being the kind of anchor guy. So it'll be interesting to see how they go with this, because there's a lot of choices to make. And I don't think that anybody really has a feel for what the right way to do it is. I mean, more than normal, where, you know, usually you and I have pretty firm opinions on, like, this is, you know, these are the players they need to target and things like that. Like, if they want to go get Lindsley, I'm all for that. I think that would be a great signing. You know, whether they cut Hugh or keep retain him after that, I think Lindsley would be a perfect fit here. But I can't say that he would make more sense than going to get a William Jackson III or something like that. So that's what the question becomes, is how do you get it? And then what do you do at wide receiver? Obviously, we're still kind of in limbo with Fitz. It's never taken this long before.
Which makes you feel it's probably retiring. But then again, I think it might be a case of he's milling it more because he knows that he's not going to get $11 million. With J.J. Watt, you know, it feels like he could come back, but maybe he'll take a minimum this year, or maybe he just waits to decide till training camp, or I don't know. That's the whole thing with him.
It does feel like, see, I'm almost opposite. It feels like if he was going to retire, he would have done it by now. Like, this is right before the off season starts. And not that Fitz is a guy that wants attention or accolades, but it almost feels like if he does it right, you know, before free agency or during free agency or after free agency or, you know, during that, the draft window, time, like it just loses kind of its luster of giving Fitz the attention he deserves. But you know, again, who knows? But that's the thing is, they've got to have an idea of what he's doing too before they go into free agency. Because, you know, all of a sudden, if he's not coming back, maybe they're way more interested in a T.Y. Hilton type of veteran that we talked about earlier. Like, that's the thing is, there's still so many unknowns. And while and that was kind of, you know, to tie this all back in, that was kind of my whole thing about the J.J. Watt signing J.J. Watt before they signed him type thing, was J.J. Watt makes this team better. There's zero question because of how good of a player he is. The only thing you can say is, well, if he's healthy. And so, but you can say that with literally every player in the NFL. That being said, it was addressing a position that was of need, but like, wouldn't you say down the list of needs of what you would have perceived as the biggest need?
Right.
And so that's why that question, or in my mind, was always there, because $16 million and you still have questions about wide receiver. You still have questions about offensive line. And then, like you said, there's not questions at cornerback. There's literally no cornerbacks.
Right.
So that's just why, I mean, I don't think there's any way. The only way that you can look at this as a negative is if you're saying, hey, he's going to be injured. Like this is a guy that can't stay healthy. And if that is your concern, then it's a completely valid one and it's fine. But, you know, unless God forbid he's Robert Alford or Marcus Gilbert, where he just doesn't take the field at all, or so minimal that it doesn't matter, then, you know, I think that it's a great fit, and it just makes your team better. And that's, at the end of the day, doesn't matter the position as much. You just need to make your team better, and they did that.
Patrick Peterson, any chance he's back now?
Again, I think it goes into what you kind of said about Fitz. Are you willing to come back to play for a team that's going for it at a reduced cost? Maybe instead of that $10 million, you're willing to take $5 million. Maybe you're willing to take 3 years, you know, $30 million, knowing that the back half of or that the last, you know, the last year that they'll pay you well, you know, or even next year, but you're only going to take, you know, $3 or $4 million in salary cap hit this year. Those are just all the questions you have to ask.
It's a whole bunch. And then you go on to the offensive side of the ball. Like here's, I think, and I guess next week when we'll talk about the show, we'll talk about Fitz and not Larry Fitzgerald, but player Fitz. And, some free agents that we could see. So I'll save that one for next week. But I think Kenyon Drake is probably gone. I think Patrick Peterson is only returns if he doesn't find what he thinks he should get. And given the choice between going somewhere else, I don't think he's going to have the Tyrann Mathieu, you know, feeling when he leaves. I think it'll be more, he's going to test the market. If he doesn't get it, then he's willing to come back at the right price for what the Cardinals are willing to pay him. Because he does want to remain a Cardinal, but he also wants to be a star cornerback still, which kind of seems to be two conflicting things right now. But yeah, I don't think Reddick's back. I think Golden might be back. Peterson is questionable. Drake is all but gone. Devondre Campbell probably moves on. And I think what they're going to need to do is to add a lower key linebacker, inside backer who can play off the bench. Like if I had to pick someone, say like a Kevin Minter type player who is capable on the field if they move Simmons around at different positions.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense. I mean, you look at what they have and what they need, and those are, you know, that would address kind of those biggest positions and give you a little backup before, you know, you seeing what you have in Isaiah Simmons.
Oh, and tight end. I could see them making a small splash. Not a big splash, but a small splash at tight end.
Kyle Rudolph just got released. I mean,
and there's a couple intriguing guys like Gerald Everett and Jonnu Smith. Those guys would be nice. Honestly, the Titans guy, Jonnu Smith, would be a dynamically good fit here. Who could take over, like play all the snaps that they would have a tight end, because he could do what Max Williams does and he can catch the football.
Right. And again, I mean, we'll talk about it as it gets closer, but there's some really good tight ends in this draft that would fit what the Cardinals want to do too. So,
and with that, we will wrap this up. And next week we will have episode 300 as we preview free agency. It's been a few weeks off. We'll be back fairly consistently now for about the next month and a half as we lead up to the draft. We got free agency, we've got reactions to free agency, and then we've got draft prep. So we will have plenty of content over the next about six, seven weeks before we get slow down as we hit the dead of the off season. But that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red. Whoa!